Hour number two of Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homesbydavidlyoung.com. This hour of Canucks Central is brought to you by BC Liquor until July 26th. Save $5 on Gerard Bertrand Cote de Roses Rosé and $7 on Seven's Hard 7-Up Original 12-Packs. Visit your nearest BC Liquor today. Enjoy responsibly. A lot of reaction coming in to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. As Kevin in Calgary says, wing depth is unreal. All top nine wings, in my opinion. That is Kevin from Calgary.
I think everybody agrees they don't have a bona fide elite wing or bona fide first line wing. Now, Besser, when he's at his best, scoring 40 goals, that's first line wing production. So we know he can do it at his best in the right situation, but no bona fide first line winger. But Joshua, Sherwood, O'Connor, Hoglander,
yeah,
they're all probably third liners.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally fair.
So your fourth line wing is pretty strong. So they have depth as far as up and down the lineup is concerned on the wing in that sense.
You have the idea of like being able to roll four lines and go about the game that way, but ultimately, and we saw this again in the playoffs, like you need star players.
Well, and you know, this is why ultimately for me to feel good about this team next year, and I, you know, there are people that are saying you guys are delusional. This team is worse than it was last year. They have no chance. They're, you know, we are so tired of them not doing anything proper for the team. And I get that. People are frustrated and want to see something bigger. And this was not a step leap forward today. Mm-hmm. Compared to what you had last year, it was kind of holding ground, so to speak. But I think as far as the team you want to be, and again, it's not going to be the most exciting hockey next year, but they're going to be a four-line team that's going to grind. But for them to do that effectively, they need one more center, I think. And if they get that center, then I'll feel good about them being a team that's going to be hard to play against, one of the best defenses in the league. If goalies are both healthy, one of the best tandems in the league. And if you have a four-line team that can grind and is good defensively, and if you, let's say your power play unit is good because you have Kane, Pettersson, Besser, and Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
If you have good power play, good PK, and you score, I don't know, it's not going to be a lot of goals. But no. If you have a good power play, good PK, good defensively, good goaltending, like you can be a tough team to beat. You're not a cup contender. Again, you need more to contend for the cup. But I think you're a center away from potentially being the type of team that's going to be tough to play against.
So much of it, like, again, not that it always revolves around Elias Pettersson, but like, yeah, if Pettersson is that number one guy again, like things change about how I feel about this team.
Yeah.
A lot changes about how I feel about this team. If he can be that impact player, that top 10 center in the league that he showed to be earlier in his career, then a lot starts to fall into place for this group, right? But one of the issues with we believe in Elias Pettersson and Filip Hedl. Like, you could say all you want. Like, hey, our goaltending's great. We got one of the best tandems in the league. Sure you do. It's great. You know, we got a great defense. We're really happy about that. The foundation of our team is our goalies and defense. None of it matters if you don't have two good centermen leading this team.
Yeah,
and so if Pettersson and Hedl aren't good enough, like, you're cooked either way.
Well, and Hedl has to be healthy as well. That's a big thing. And my biggest question for Hedl isn't his ability to provide offense. We know his speed, his zone entries, his aggressiveness, all those things help this roster. When he's on the team, he makes the team better. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
But he's not a defensive ace.
No.
He doesn't win a ton of faceoffs. He doesn't play on the PK. And Suter did a lot of those things. So, and they're not replacing that. So they have to replace that somehow. Or this text says, Ratu is going to be a two-way beast. Give him a chance the way Florida gave Lundell a chance. That's like manna from heaven, the quote, Tony Gallagher. If you can get that, and I'm not against it. Sure. Like, you know, I love
Lundell
to see
was
like
what,
that.
A 15th overall pick or something like that?
Hey, Ratu was a high second. He was thought of highly, but I don't see that upside either. I'm with you. But the point being, those are the types of things you're going to need for this team. But if you add a player of that caliber at some point here, then I do think you can be a good regular season team that in the playoffs might be tough to beat, a tough out. And you give yourself a chance, I think, to be one or two moves away from being interesting. You know, and if you didn't bring Besser back today,
yeah,
and you didn't replace him with a player who's a legitimate, you know, second line or perhaps fringe first line wing, well, you're even worse off than where you were last year, and now you're really behind the eight ball.
Do you think Hedl has, I don't know if breakout potential is the right word. Does Filip Hedl have breakout potential? It certainly looked that way his first few games in Vancouver.
I do think so. I think Filip Hedl, if he can stay healthy, can he get you high 50s?
Yeah.
Can he maybe get you 60 points if he stays healthy?
Production-wise, that's like, you know, second line center type of value.
And I think if you look at, so he the 1 year he played 74 games, he had 45 points.
Yeah.
The only time he played more games was 75 in his second season, well, you know, his first full season in the NHL. So that year he was essentially a close to 50-point player.
Yeah.
So at his best, he can probably be 55 to 60 mm-hmm. if everything goes right for him. So the thing is, though, can he play a way where he doesn't put himself in bad positions? Because every game, he exposes himself.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest fear for Filip Hedl is he plays so aggressive, he plays so fearless that he's sometimes his own worst enemy. And the game has changed so often because players lay off hits. Players don't take the hits very often because they don't want to get suspended or kicked out of a game. But all it takes is one guy sometimes.
Yeah.
You're frustrated or a guy's a rookie. A guy's trying to, you know, prove a point or whatever it is, and you got your head down. Or
well, even the one that knocked him out for the year. It's not like it wasn't overly malicious from Jason Dickinson.
No, and to me, for that one, it was more about your awareness of your surroundings and just how you position your skates even and things like that. And I think that's the thing I'm concerned about. If he stays healthy, point production-wise and offense and giving your team speed, I think he does all those things. He's not going to be the checker, though.
No.
But that health's my only question for Hedl. But otherwise, I think he's a very nice offensive player that can, you know, play down your lineup. Like, I think he helps you in a lot of offensive ways and especially when it comes to getting more speed and zone entries. The Canucks, Hedl and O'Connor played like a week and became the Canucks' two best forwards in terms of zone entries in a week.
Yeah.
They surpass all the other players who have played like 40 games for the team.
It's
clear they bring something this team lacks, right?
Yeah.
So I do like him a lot. It's just, can he stay healthy?
He's going to have to stay healthy in order to bring the Canucks some value in that spot. I am leaving open the idea that he's a player that can be a second line center for the Vancouver Canucks. I think that's one of the reasons he was so excited to come here in that trade. He saw the opportunity, was never given or gifted that opportunity in New York. Is this the moment of his career that he gets that? But yes, as this texter says, fan of both of you, but come on, Reach, why not say, and quote, you just said being about cooked with Hedl as your second line center while you had Alvin on the line. My point that I just made was, if Pettersson doesn't return to form mm-hmm. and Hedl doesn't have a breakout, then yeah, you're going to need to upgrade at center. And Alvin also alluded to having to upgrade at center through the course of the interview as well, as we continue to press him on that issue.
Yeah, and again, he's not going to come out there and say anything negative about Hedl. And I think they're, again, we just outlined a lot of things that Hedl does well. But even if Hedl hits all those markers, he doesn't kill penalties. He's not a matchup center. So
that's what Teddy Bluger's for.
Yes, but it's really what Pugh Suter was for.
Yes.
You haven't replaced his role. So can Teddy Bluger and Pettersson? Because I think so.
Do you want Pettersson playing more penalty kill minutes when you need him to be
no
the leader for the team? Really?
Yeah, and that's where you know, you can say all these things, and I think it's posturing in many ways. I think for him to say that, and I think you have to back your players publicly and say, hey, you know, we think we're okay. You're not gonna come out and say, I don't think we have a chance if we don't get this type of guy, right? Yeah.
You're not going to come out and say that. Like, I'm not sure you can. I mean, you can be open to the idea of Pettersson playing 22 to 24 minutes a night, like one of those real horses around the league. But for a guy that had conditioning issues last year, questions last year, is that something you want to be committed to going into next season?
But you still need those other guys. For instance, look at Florida.
Yeah.
And Florida's trying to be a cup contender and the Canucks aren't there yet. But you have Barkov, you know, the premier two-way center in the league. Reinhart was up there for the Selke. He can also do the same thing. And then you have Lundell, Owen Listerainen, Owen Evan Rodriguez.
Yeah.
You can't just be one, you know, it's not just Barkov and a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what we're saying. You know, you can't expect Pedersen and a bunch of guys to do it all. So I think before the season begins, they'll add that player. And if they do, I'll feel better about their forward group as far as being competitive. We got this text earlier, too, from Andy the Park Granger. And I think it's a fair summation of how the situation has unfolded. Sometimes teams destroy their future on July 1st. I think so far this management team has proven a propensity to not overspend and in the end make good sense moves this time of year. They may have not gotten the 2C they wanted, but they didn't panic. They made moves and signings that make sense and are acceptable value, and they still have the ammo to make an acquisition later on. B+ offseason, Andy the Park Ranger. I'm not sure I would go far as saying B+, but as you've alluded, they haven't done anything to hurt themselves, like really kill their chances of competing long term. And they didn't keep their powder dry as far as cap space goes, but they did keep it dry as far as their assets go.
Yeah.
And that gives you a chance to make a move at some point here, which you were already willing to make. So you're in the race. And I think sometimes in July 1st, you can either take yourself out of the race, or you can put yourself behind the race. And I don't think the Canucks did that, at least today.
So the other element of today that we've yet to get to from a Canucks perspective, couple of things. One of them, Patrick Alvin spoke about with us, but I want to first get your take on Demko's contract, 3 years at $8.5 million per.
Yeah, so I'm surprised it ended up being 3 years and over $8 million.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Canucks really wanted to keep that number under eight was kind of my understanding before. And we kind of wondered, are they willing to go, you know, 4 or 5 years to keep that number lower? Clearly not. And I don't hate it because, again, looking at the Canucks cap situation for next season, they have enough cap space where I'm not worried about it, where they can make a big addition next year. And if they shift a couple of things around, they'll have more flexibility. So I think there can be an okay position cap wise for next year. So I don't have an issue with the AAV. And I think the 3 years, I'm happier and more comfortable with Demko for 3 years than more than that, especially given his health situation, because I think you can manage the next four. I'd be uncomfortable managing the next 5 to 6 years of Demko.
It's it would be a big commitment to go long term. I think locking in one of the best goalie tandems in the league is a good idea for the Vancouver Canucks. Going to an 84 game schedule, you're going to need to lean on both guys. Demko's injury history, you're going to need to lean on both guys. But it is, and it's not going to hurt so much. Like this year, the cap hit is still what, 9.5 combined for the two, so it's not that big of a deal. But next year, when Demko's extension does kick in, you're going to be spending $13 million on the cap between your two goalies. Even if you know we're projecting a cap of $104 million, you've still got the near $5 million penalty on Oliver Ekman-Larsson. It's just my question would be like you're committed to being a defense first team. A lot of defense first teams, yeah, you need good goaltending to like make the best of that good defense, but your quality team defense should help your goaltending and maybe help you not have to spend so much on your goaltending. Ultimately, it's just a question of, is this the best way to spend your cap dollars? And I think to this point, it's unproven that this would be a good way for the Canucks to spend their cap dollars. Yeah,
that's all fair. I like betting on Demko's upside, though, because Demko is the only player not named Hughes or Pedersen that has shown he can be elite on this roster and be amongst the best
at
his position.
Now, right? Top five AAV for a goalie in the league.
He is now, and he's the only guy on the roster that can. So I like him being back because of that, and you take in rolling the dice on it. And for next year, the cap hits fine, 9.5. And I think we should be careful assuming that Lankinen and Demko, for that matter, are both going to be here for the next 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. Just because Lankinen signed a 5-year deal doesn't mean he's going to be here this whole time. He got the bag. The Canucks gave him market value. He signed it. And he wants to be a starting goalie.
Yeah.
If Demko gets healthy and finds his game and Lankinen plays well, not to say he's going to pout or want out, but I think he'd be open to perhaps in one offseason, a year or two from now, going somewhere where he can be the starter.
Right.
So I think you have options still, and as much as no trade clauses are here, the Canucks have already, with this management team, traded a lot of guys with no trade clauses, right? So I think they can find ways to make that happen. But I'd be careful assuming that they're necessarily going to go into 2 years from now with both guys here. So we'll see kind of what happens. I think they wanted to take a chance on Demko and get security with Lankinen. and see what where it goes next year. And it gives you a bit of a chance here to see what you can do with it. So I don't hate the bet for next year.
I guess the best case scenario that I would look at is something like best case scenario of recent comp is like Allmark and Swayman.
Yeah.
Right, and they were dynamite together, and they each played 40 games, and it worked incredibly well for the Boston Bruins.
But both guys want to start at some point.
And both guys were paid a lot less than Lankanen and Demko currently are.
But they all got paid at some point.
Yes.
Allmark got over $8 million, and Swayman got $8 million.
Yes.
So both guys got paid, but for a while, you know, you had both. But at some point, you know, both guys want to play. But I think you can do it for a year or two.
Yeah. And then see where it goes from there, especially with Demko's injury history, recent injury history. You got to have some insurance there. So this is the way the Canucks go about solving that issue. The other part of what we spoke about with Alvin. Now, Atu Ratu could be helpful for the Vancouver Canucks. He may be thrust into a pretty sizable role if they don't do much else over the course of the summer. But how much of next season being a success does depend on some of these prospects actually graduating to full-time NHLers and being, you know, having some value for the NHL team on top of that?
It's going to be massive. As it stands, let's say the Canucks don't add that center.
Yeah.
It falls on Ratu or Sasson or Bluger. It falls on one of those two guys. We know what Bluger is and what he isn't. I don't think we can expect him to be a shutdown guy.
I guess outside chance of Ty Mueller, too.
Ty Mueller.
How could you forget your boy?
Yeah, I love Ty Mueller, but even he's not going to be...
still far away, yes.
I mean, he might make it as far as the depth guy goes, but not a guy that's going to be eating big minutes, I think, for you. Your best shot at that is Ratu.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure on the wing right now there is a spot open if everybody's healthy. Like right now, if everybody's healthy, where's Lacrimacchi playing?
In Abbotsford.
You know,
even Linus Karlsson, like where
he's your 13th forward, I think.
Yeah. Like you don't even have a spot necessarily, an everyday spot for Linus Karlsson now that you've brought Brock Besser back.
Yeah. So I see Lekromäki as it stands, unless they trade someone, as it stands, being either the 13th forward, which at that point is better for him to go play, and Linus Karlsson, who requires waivers, is probably your 13th forward.
Yeah.
So it's Ratu, that's the big one. It's a lot of chips to put on one guy, but if he does come through, that's massive. And then obviously on the back end, now DPD didn't go down, but he's very much a prospect, and we saw a lot of great things from him. Vilander hasn't played in Abbey yet, but he's a guy, obviously. And then Victor Mancini, and even Kudryavtsev as the year goes by, because if injuries happen, these are the next guys up. And injuries are going to happen.
Yeah, injuries always happen. So you're going to, the Canucks' depth going down to Abbotsford is something that is, I think at this point you could say, fairly, it's an organizational strength.
Yeah, and you know what? It's way too early because, again, the Canucks haven't finished their roster yet. But as it stands, next year, you would have Lekromäki starting in the minors, Sasson starting in the minors, Baines seeing if he clears waivers, Ratu because you're not exposing him, and Linus Karlsson because you're probably not exposing him.
Yeah.
And that's your forward group.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the guys are going to be call-ups based on needs arising, so to speak. So Ratu is the guy we look at, and DPD and Vilander. Those are the three guys we look at. How big of an impact can they make next year for this team?
Well, and if they don't add a center, you can always leave the conversation open for, will Braden Coutts make the team when we start training camp?
Oh, gosh.
I'm just throwing it out there. We're going to get those questions.
Yeah.
We will. Prediction.
Zach Benson did.
Yeah. So keep those ideas coming. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. So around the league, into the Canucks Central roundup. A lot happened today. Obviously not going to run through everything. Sportsnet.ca. I will give you a nice, clear, concise idea of everything that did go down today. But it was a stark sort of realization once we got to market and the market opened, just how little there was out there of impact value. And I think that's reflected in some of the contracts that were actually given out to unrestricted free agents. Again, Brock Besser got the biggest one of any UFA that signed today at $50.75 million. Everybody, most guys either decided to stay. Marner got traded before he hit free agency. Rantanen got traded before he hit free agency. A ton of guys. Marcus Pettersson signed with the Canucks before he got to free agency. In a rising cap, and a league of 32 teams and a dwindling talent pool, I think we saw all like some of those things converge together for teams to be like, we can't afford to lose our guys.
Yeah.
We want to add, but we can't afford to lose like even the mid players, like middle of the lineup guys. We can't even afford to lose those guys because it's hard to replace.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's where the scarcity comes in across the league now, yeah. Especially with 32 teams, that even the guy you before you had the luxury of being like, you know what? Let's just get rid of this guy and get a better player because we can. Well, that option does not exist. You can get rid of him, but you may not get a better player. And then you're stuck with, do I want to get worse?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
Do I really want to take that chance?
Yeah.
Do I really feel that risky today?
And I think we're back to a point where that middle six player is more valuable now again. And before it was, they were getting squeezed out of the league because the cap was flat and it was either the high-end guys or ELC guys. So the players that were decent were getting squeezed and getting smaller contracts. Those guys are getting paid more now. But it also hasn't exploded for them. It seems to be more measured, where you're seeing even Jonathan Drouin got the 2-year deal worth $4 million per season.
Yeah.
Where you're seeing guys get 2 or 3 years at AAVs at 4 and above, but they're not getting the 4 or 5 years necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But it's allowed, but those players are, again, if you're holding on to a player like that, you don't want to get rid of, say, Hoglander, for instance, for nothing, because if you want to sign a player like Hoglander, like, say, Kuzmenko, for instance, you're paying $4 million to sign him.
Even if it is shorter term.
Yeah. So to your point, yeah, I think teams are more reluctant now to let their free agents go.
And he really felt it on the defense market as well. A couple of the contracts that stood out to me, Gavrikov getting 7x7 from the Rangers, $1.5 million less than Provorov signed per season with the Columbus Blue Jackets. There was a Columbus tax involved there for the Blue Jackets to keep Provorov. Gavrikov signing a much more favorable contract. Obviously, he wanted to go to New York.
Yes.
So that contract reflects it a little bit. But then there's Ryan Lindgren with Seattle at 4.5x4. Cody Ceci getting 4.5 or thereabouts with the LA Kings by $4 million by 4 years as well. Dumoulin 4x3 with the LA Kings. I mean, you kind of looked at it and you said, well, I see why the Canucks gave Marcus Pettersson that contract that they did. And I even feel pretty good about the Forbert contract at 1 year, $2 million for Derek Forbert after the season he had.
Yeah, even the depth guys, you see what they're getting paid if you want to replace. I think Dumoulin is more established than Forbert, of course, and can play bigger minutes. But, you know, you're paying significantly more for a better version of Forbert, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Forbert can be a PK ace, right? And you get him at another year at $2 million and allows you to, it gives you space to continue to develop your young guys as well and gives them cushion. I think those are all valuable things to the Vancouver Canucks that they wouldn't have been able to get that in free agency if they let Forbert walk.
No. And as far as you're trying to fight for a playoff spot, look at what the Kraken did. They signed Lindgren. They traded for Marchman, of course. I'm not sure they're significantly better than what they were last season. The LA Kings, you mentioned CC Dumoulin, Anton Forsberg, the goalie. They signed Joel Armia and Corey Perry. Now, they still have cap space, but do the Kings look like they've separated themselves from the pack?
I don't know if the Kings got better today.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Now, again, there's more time left in the offseason, and we'll see where Ehlers lands ultimately. They're not done yet, I suppose, because they have some space, but you know, as far as where the Canucks are in terms of a playoff spot, I don't think the distance grew today, at least.
It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We'll continue talking about free agency, what happened around the league, and what could be next for Pew Suter, who is one of the best remaining free agents. Dave Pignota of the Fourth Period will join us next on Canucks Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on Canuck Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by BC Liquor until July 26th. Explore their exceptional selection and save. Like $3 off Espolon Blanco Tequila. Visit your nearest BC Liquor today. Enjoy responsibly.
Hey, Reach, prepare yourself.
What happened?
PDG has signed.
Where?
The Jets.
Oh, well, Winnipeg's got a beauty. Yeah. Phil DiGiuseppe has left Vancouver.
Yeah, sorry, Reach.
He was seen walking the streets of Vancouver in the Calder T-shirt with the two fingers sticking up at a Charlotte Checkers fan. But
what a way to go out, though, right?
And what a way to go out for PDG. Man, what a great couple of years it's been. Winnipeg's got a beauty. All right, let's bring in our next guest. It is Dave Pignota of The Fourth Period. He joins us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. What's happening, Pegs?
How are you, boys? How's it going?
We're pretty good. It was an interesting July 1. You know, it just feels like every year there's more. I was gonna say interesting. There's more impact players on the market come July 1, but this year there just wasn't that. It kind of feels like that's maybe a reaction to the rising cap. Teams have more space to keep their own guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's a big part of it, as we've seen clearly with, you know, Florida trying to run everything back and a lot of teams that want to keep their guys in place. The extra cap space definitely helps, and plus at the same time the alternatives, at least from a free agency perspective, just weren't there. This was an overall shallow free agent pool that got shallower and shallower as the days got closer to July 1 and the options dwindled. And, you know, that forces some teams to start exploring the trade market and looking at alternative options. And some of them just say, you know what, we need to make a play here and step up and keep our guys in place. And that's what a lot of teams ended up doing, including the Canucks.
Well, and with Brock too, I mean, it's so interesting because 24, 48 hours ago, it seemed like a foregone conclusion that Brock was going to make it to free agency. What do you think changed?
Yeah. It all changed this morning. About an hour leading into, or that final hour leading into to the free agent doors officially opening up, the conversations continued. And I think reality set in for both sides on the team side that, you know, you're going to lose this caliber player. You could have options out there that are available to you. You've started to do your due diligence, and maybe the options just weren't going to be available to you to replace that kind of player. And then from Brock's side, I think it's also the realization of the moving. Like he wanted to be here. He didn't want to go through this process. I think everybody knows how much he enjoys being in Vancouver. But then, you know, with that final hour and going, okay, well now, and there would have been plenty of options available to him, certainly, and some good quality options. But just that sense of change on both sides, I think reality set in for both. And within that final hour, they were able to kind of come to terms on that new deal and then obviously take a little bit of extra time to you know, cross the T's and dot the I's. But this, you know, even last night, there wasn't much of an indication that they were going to get to the finish line until this morning, and they ultimately do.
Yeah, I do believe that there were probably better offers out there for him too, at least more total value money, maybe like above $55 million even. Just because, again, you know, between him and Ehlers, I mean, they could have their pick of the litter of teams looking for scoring wingers.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I think he definitely, you know, left some money on the table out there. And, you know, but at the same time, does he want to stay in this environment? Does he want to explore a new one, whether it's, you know, San Jose, Anaheim, that probably would have thrown more money, possibly Columbus? You know, I think him being comfortable in this market, him just truly enjoying himself in Vancouver and loving the city, and, of course, having friends on the team and everything tied to that was the ultimate deciding factor on his side of things. In terms of just deciding to take a little bit less to stay versus, you know, going for a bigger ticket elsewhere. And then I think from Vancouver's side of things, again, that realization and saying, okay, we'll add up a little bit of extra term here to get you to that final number. $50 million was always kind of that sweet spot. It never really got there until this morning. And with the extra year on the deal to spread out the AAV overall, they got their number, a little over, and it's done.
So we spoke to Patrick Alvin about a little over an hour ago, and he didn't close the door yet on Pew Suter, but they would have to move money out to make it work. There hasn't been a lot of reporting on Puce. Have you heard which teams are interested in bringing the Swiss Army knife to town?
I think you're probably looking at you know, some of the teams that I mentioned that were going after Brock, the ones that have the extra money to spend. Because the word was he was looking around that $5 million mark on the open market, and I hadn't really heard much. I know Philly kind of was – there was some level of interest from Philadelphia's side of things, but they acted pretty swiftly in getting Christian Dvorak locked into a one-year deal at 5.4. They shifted in that direction. You know, I don't think Anaheim necessarily. They seem to be pretty set in, up the middle unless they want to throw him on the wing. San Jose's got some options there. You know, and they've got a ton of money. The Sharks are an interesting club. They've been telling everybody, hey, we got money. Come to us. We're willing to give you a little bit extra to come here. And obviously they haven't, you know, cashed in at least on a big ticket anyway. So Granlund, a little bit extra, goes to Anaheim for seven sheets a year. With Suter, you know, they're going to see a few guys that are going to kind of trickle into that second tier going into July 2nd and possibly July 3rd as some teams, A, either, you know, veer in his direction in terms of options, and B, again, teams like San Jose willing to spend the extra money and willing to give him a little bit extra to go there if he's willing to go through that rebuild process that they're still in and very much likely will be throughout the duration of his contract.
And it was really interesting looking at free agency. Some teams were willing to go long on term, but it seemed like teams were willing to give the AAV $4 million, $5 million, but as long as it's on short term, right? Like 2 or 3 years max.
Yeah, I mean, as we saw, like I don't see one contract that I look at that goes that for me just looks to be outrageous. Like, I think there have been pretty decent numbers across the board, both on short term and some of the deals that have a little extra term to it. Like, no one's been blowing anybody out of the water in terms of big mega dollars, and you know, here's a 7 year term at $9 million or anything along those lines. Now let's see what Nick Ehlers ends up at. He might be in that neighborhood, but you know, I don't think there's an overpay. I don't think there's going to be a scenario where we say, or excuse me, see Nick Ehlers lock into a $70 million contract. You know, once he makes his decision, most likely tonight/tomorrow, I mean, he's still overseas, so he's got some decisions to make there once he wakes up. But yeah, I don't look. I mean, there's a few that have stood out and going, okay, maybe, you know, maybe Granlund a little extra, but nothing too crazy. Cody Ceci, the marketplace, a lot of people are poo-pooing over that deal with LA, 4 years at 4.5, but he was going to be in that $4 million range no matter what, wherever he ends up. So, or ended up, and it ended up being in Los Angeles. So nothing to me that really stood out, at least today anyway, so far, where I'm going, man, that team just completely, you know, overpaid for player X. I just haven't seen it this time.
I guess the one was maybe for me, Tanner Jeannot, and maybe it's more because, like, okay, the Bruins said no to keeping Brad Marchand, but they end up, you know, trading for Victor Arvidsson and adding Tanner Jeannot. Maybe you just should have kept Brad Marchand. I don't know. That might have been better.
I mean, I think the you know, larger comparable there, the more appropriate one in this regard because of age and everything, is Trent Frederick. You know, Trent Frederick is the guy that they ended up moving out ahead of the deadline. He locks into a deal with Edmonton at 3.85. So, you know, kind of comparable from that sense in terms of, you know, the dollar value tied to it at $3.4 million for Jeannot. But I think, you know, there are a lot of teams that were interested in him with the impression, or being under the impression, that he was kind of misused in LA. He never really had consistency playing with the Kings. He was kind of jumbled up and down the lineup, never really found his footing there. And part of that could be, you know, from the staff as well. They just couldn't find the right fit. He didn't just, you know, mesh well with the rest of the group. And Boston certainly, and there were other teams that had interest in Jeannot as well, but Boston certainly viewed this as an opportunity for them to take a player, put him into a new environment, give him more responsibility, and for their sake, they hope he succeeds.
As far as Nick Ehlers is concerned, where do you see him landing?
Well, Carolina still seems to be the one that everyone's kind of pointing at. And, you know, he's, from all accounts, wanted to be in an environment that gives him an opportunity to compete. for a championship. And right now it seems like that's the more likely option. I think there's more money on the table for him elsewhere, like San Jose, for example. But there are other teams that are also, you know, definitely in there that may have to, you know, juggle some money around. You know, Washington, I know Tampa poked around for a certain period of time, but Washington's another interesting one as well, kind of in competition with Carolina. And the Canes have a lot more cap space to play with, even with getting Keandre Miller in that trade with New York. But the Capitals have, or at least to start the day, I haven't looked at the new numbers, but they were in and around that $7 million mark. I think just under it at the time. They're still there, 6.95. So if they do get into the mix here, they're likely going to have to free up some cap space. Now, we are in the offseason, so teams can exceed the cap by 10% before the start of the regular season. So there'll be some, you know, they got some wiggle room in terms of the schedule, the calendar, I should say. But I wouldn't count out the caps either. But then, you know, with both Washington and Carolina, you're likely looking at somewhere in the eights, would be my guess, as opposed to him likely cashing in the nines in an environment like, you know, like San Jose, for example, where they've got the willingness to spend extra dollars to lure players to town. I think Chicago has kind of poked around on that as well, along with Columbus. But those two, Chicago more so, tied to San Jose with respect to rebuilding. Columbus kind of on that playoff bubble zone. So he's going to have to make a decision, and he's expected to make it at some point tomorrow on our side of the pond.
Kind of a fun spot for Mike Greer to be in right now with the San Jose Sharks. Like, he's got to spend $9 million just to get to the salary cap floor. Like, hey Mike, figure out a way to spend $9 million, nine sheets, you got it, figure it out. It sounds like fun. I could go on a $9 million spending spree.
Yeah, well, it would be, but he hasn't been able to lure anybody over yet.
That's true. So,
it's a little more difficult than it apparently seems to be.
It's an interesting one because they are still so far away from the floor. You know, there are some still like quality veterans, I guess, like Gustav Nyquist around, and we'll see how the market develops over the next couple of days. But at the end of the day, like, if you want to add an impact player, you got to do it via trade, right? Like Keandre Miller, wasn't a cheap cost for Carolina today. Scott Morrow, good D prospect, conditional first as well, and a second. So it wasn't cheap to get Keandre Miller. We know the Canucks have been hot after Marco Rossi, and it was costing, at least it was a big asking price from the Minnesota Wild. Like, I can understand the idea of the trade market heating up, but you know, teams are just asking for pretty high prices if they are trading one of these youngish players that could be available.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And a lot of teams that we're looking at, you know, their options in terms of bringing in some impact type of, you know, they looked at the market and went, there's not really much for us, you know, out here right now. So you have to almost go in that direction. Like the Montreal Canadiens, and Kent Hughes mentioned this earlier today as well, you know, they were more gun set on adding somebody via the trade market than really dipping their toes into impact additions via free agency. They just felt it was more appropriate for them to go that route. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs are looking still for a top six winger to bring in. They've been looking primarily in the trade market after they kind of realized that the free agent market for them was going to dry up and that, you know, some other players didn't really have interest in joining them. So they wanted to kind of go that route. So we're going to start, we'll see that more and more, you know, over the course of the summer. I think because of the cap, it gives teams a lot more flexibility to not necessarily have to make, a near panic move now or in the, you know, couple of days after July 1st. You could see some teams just kind of resetting a little bit and then reconvening on discussions later. But there are still, you know, for some of the guys that are still out there, you know, Mason Appleton and Andrew Mangiapane, and you mentioned Nyquist, like they've got still some options that are available to them right now. It's just a matter of finding out where the best fit is. And some of those teams that are going to be fishing later on also want to have those answers in the next day or so.
Well, and we know the Canucks are still, you know, somewhat engaged. Well, Alvin told us they're still open to bringing Suter back and opening up cap space if they do, and they're clearly looking at making some trades. And we have somebody that texts mm-hmm. into our inbox all the time, brings up Kirby Dach's name. As far as the trade market is concerned, do you think we'll see some movement, and could we see a guy like Kirby Dach on the move?
The Canadians have, you know, they they've acknowledged, or Hughes again acknowledged today, that they're still in the market for a two seed. You know, Bull Duke that they brought in from St. Louis for Logan Mayu, they view him more as a winger, which he primarily is. Versatile, can play both sides, but they view him as an offensive addition that could come from the wings rather than being a guy that can stabilize their roster up the middle. I think if the Canadians find themselves in an environment where they bring in a young, controllable, offensive-minded center that can slot into that second-line role, then I think they would be open to the idea of making Kirby Dach available. They said that he's been training well, he's been healing, he's ready to go. They're very curious to see how he gets going once training camp gets underway in September. But if they fill that slot, then, you know, it certainly allows for, you know, more options. It's very similar to what the Canadians did when they brought in Noah Dobson. Now, yeah, you did a big splash from that regard, but it further deepened the right side of their decor and the prospect pool, which allowed them to then slot out Logan Mayu and bring in Bull Duke from that side of things. So certain things are certainly situational. If they make an addition here, would another guy be available? Sure. But, you know, we'll have to obviously wait and see if the Canadians can pull anything off there.
Pags, we always appreciate the time you put in any spadooch on the barbecue for a little late night Canada Day snack. That sounds pretty good to me.
Oh, that's going to be the rest of the week. I'm getting, I got a ribeye going on the grill right after this one.
Sounds pretty good. Thanks for this, Pags.
Okay. See you, boys.
There he is. David Pignota joining us here on Canuck Central at the fourth period. Interesting the way the free agent market has played out today.
Yeah.
But doesn't have a good sense of where Pugh Suter might end up.
No, nobody does.
No.
Nobody does. Like, you know, the best we could do was Philly yesterday, and Pags brought up Philly now, and they signed Dvorak. And I, like, asked around a lot. I was, like, trying to figure out, like, where is Pugh Suter going? Who are these Pugh Suter suitors? The Suter suitors. We're not sure who they are.
The Pugh suitors.
Yeah. So we still don't know, and we'll see ultimately. But, you know, so Granlund, you could say, was holding it up for a while, but he's signed now.
Yeah. Signed with Anaheim. $7 million, which is pretty big price tag at 3 years for Michael Granlund.
Yeah. And when you look at Suter being available, Roslovic being available, Ehlers still available, Mangiapane still available, those are four of the top, 10, 15 free agents available?
Yeah.
Still on the market, so to speak. We didn't think Mangiapane was going to get a ton because he's coming off a tough year. But because of the cap going up, would somebody pay him? It seems like teams are, again, willing to go 1 or 2 years, and do these guys want a little bit more? And that might be the holdup here. Because I think on Suter especially, the Ehlers, we knew right away that they were going to wait. And I'll get to a theory in a second on Suter. But I mean, on who was it we were talking about?
Ehlers
in a second. But on Suter, you would think if there was a robust market, like, he would have signed by now.
Yes. You would think if he had a lot of suitors for him that he would have signed by now, but he hasn't.
Yeah.
And I guess it comes down to, you know, what exactly are you looking for? Do you want to be on a contender? Are you just taking money from one of the lesser lights? I'm sure there's been interest.
Sure.
But
I bet
there's been interest at the high number he was maybe expecting, given how shallow the market is.
I think I think for him, term is the issue.
Yeah.
I think teams will give, if Dvorak had 1 by 5, I would imagine someone would give Suter 1 by 5 or something along those lines, or 2, but can he get a bit more? But the longer it goes, does it open up the possibility of coming back to Vancouver?
I guess in theory it should.
It's too early. It's still July 1st. Nothing's happened yet. But I just wonder, the longer this goes, the possibility opens up more, and the Canucks were willing to commit to term to a lot of their guys today.
Then they really would have brought the band back together.
Well, could you get Suter back at a cheaper number if you go term, if his market is relatively soft?
Yeah.
Let's say if he doesn't sign by tomorrow, could you get him in the threes over term?
If there isn't 15 or, 12 to $15 million out there for him from another team, then I guess you could,
you know,
on a four-year deal.
So I wonder, because, you know, Alvin didn't close the door, and he said if he signed him, we'll move somebody. And if you look at what the Canucks can move, it's in that $3 million range. So they can't even sign him to, I think what Alvin was alluding to, reading between the lines here, is if he wants 4+, it's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
But if that number comes down, and it's in the three range,
and we can maybe make it work.
Whether it's Dakota Joshua, whether it's Nils Höglander, maybe we can move one of those guys and we can sign Suter then. So I wonder, the longer it goes, maybe the door on him doesn't completely close either.
It's going to be an interesting one on Pugh Suter.
He's got to get 18 mil though.
For us to win the bet against Sat, he needs to get 18 million.
And you guys got to get, I said under 18.
So Sat, I need Sat said to under push it up a little bit.
Sat took under 18.
Yeah.
We all took the over. Cha-ching. So if it's under 18 total million, total value, 18 million total value, Sat's going to get a couple of coffees.
I'm getting coffees. Yeah.
Do we spread out the coffees?
It's up to you guys.
It's the coffee you pour out for Phil DJ.
I got to say, I'm feeling less confident that Pugh Suter is getting over $18 million as we sit here at 4:51 on July 1st, but, and Pugh Suter is yet to sign.
I mean, what if the market is hot for him?
Yeah.
And he's holding out for even more. And it's like, I got lots of money on the table.
He's got all these options.
Theory is he's got a lot of options, you know.
It's clandestine.
And he's in Switzerland because he's the Swiss Army knife and he's Swiss. And he's going to wake up in the morning. He's like, you know what? I just need a night to sleep on it. I'm going to wake up in the morning and pick my destination.
I just think it's odd that for a guy who's one of the top free agents, we haven't heard a single team linked to him outside of Philly that already answered their center position. When we ask about Ehlers, it's like, this team, that team. And we ask about anybody else, this team, that team. Mangiapane, you hear like, you know, Edmonton maybe, you know, you hear
Toronto
maybe, some different teams. Like, who has linked Suter to anybody?
No. Nobody.
Maybe he's just a really private guy.
Oh, he's Swiss. Keeping
it
the
exactly. Yeah. Swiss vault.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't feel as confident about this this wager.
We'll see how it goes. Yesterday you were. Yesterday Reach was like, man, so you're going to buy me coffee tomorrow?
I was like, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens.
Is that over yet?
No, it's definitely not over yet.
He has yet to sign.
This Texan, Suter's going to get 6 years at $3 million per from somebody. We'll see if that happens. We'll talk more about the free agent landscape. Also, Ian McIntyre is going to join us. Some of the winners and losers of the offseason so far. I feel like it's just easy to say Florida. You know?
Yeah.
They keep Marshawn, Ekblad, and Sam Bennett. Feels like a pretty good collection of players to be locked into. I think they've got Seth Jones, Gustav Forsling, and Aaron Ekblad signed for a combined like 18.85 or something. Like it's really under 19.
It's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's absurd.
In this economy?
I mean, and how can the rich keep winning?
Yeah.
I guess that's how it goes.
That's how it goes. I mean, hey, you build a contender with good atmosphere and ownership that'll provide you with anything and everything you need to have a successful team. And it seems like players will just, I'll leave a bunch of money on the table for that. That sounds good to me. It's not even the no state tax anymore. It's just like, there's nowhere else I'd rather play. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't even care about the tax. Nowhere else I'd rather play.
It's where I want to be. That's it.
You know, like other situations, guys. Yeah, I really wanted to stay there. But you signed at market value to stay in that place.
That's true. Now, I would say, so Ekblad got $48
million. Yes.
That extra year, I don't think should be dismissed as much as it does get dismissed. So Gavrikov got $49 million. How much more was Ekblad getting? At most.
As a right shot, though.
Was he getting more than 8x7, which is 56? So, okay, $8 million more, $7 million more. But if you include the taxes, it's pretty much negligible.
Mm.
So I get it. Like, he took less. But when you look at the market and you look at, you know, their tax benefit, it wasn't a huge discount.
His AAV went down by almost $1.5 million.
That's because they have the eighth year. That's what the eighth year does. It allows you to bring it down. Because, again, I don't think he was getting more than 8x7, mm-hmm. most likely.
He left a lot of money on the table.
Yeah.
I believe.
Some.
If you want to see Maple Leafs Twitter melting right now, the Vegas Golden Knights are having a field day with Mitch Marner, doing a jersey sort of thing and everything like that. So it's interesting times via hockey Twitter. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up. Ian McIntyre is going to join us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. iMac, his take next on Canuck Central. final hour of Canuck Central. You get an extended edition of Canuck Central today. With signing season on tap, a little bit of extra coverage on the station. Coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homesbydavidlyoung.com.
Do you think people have had enough of us the past, since Friday? I think we've done, what was it, 5 hours on Friday.
Yeah.
6 hours on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Three today.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of hours of radio.
Are people sick of us by now, you think?
I would hope to think not, because if people get sick of us, that might mean that we're out of jobs.
Yes.
That.
Okay.
So right. hopefully, people can listen in for another hour on what the Canucks had to do today. And also, they'll get to hear in on somebody they like a lot more than they like us, and that is one of our favorites. He is Ian McIntyre. This insider brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. What's happening, iMac? How you doing?
I'm doing well, and I have to say that's a low bar if you're saying that I'm more popular than you guys are. But I'll tell you what I'm sick of. I'm sick of Dan Riccio out driving me with his five wood when I'm trying to hit driver. I don't know how such a small package of power can deliver such a wallop on the golf ball in about one out of every three swings.
Just don't tell him I hit my driver 100 yards. That's the funny part about that one. But yes, I'll always have that. The once in a blue moon striping it with the elevation at Nick North. It probably helped it along a few yards as well.
Well, it was a fun day anyway. And hopefully we're all going to have more time for golf soon. Do you play, Sat?
Not well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so you're like Dan.
Yeah. No, Dan's very well. Yeah. Yes.
Dan's better, definitely better than I am.
Which, again, low bar. But hey, we're all just like different varies of bad in golf. That's really.
You know what? Everybody is, and I can tell you, half of the players on tour would probably say the same things about themselves. Like, no matter how bad you are, there's someone worse, and no matter how good you are, you feel like you can always be better.
Isn't that
maybe
what
not Scottie Scheffler, right? But I think everybody else.
Isn't that what they say about golf? It's all suffering, just degrees of it.
Yes. Yes. I haven't heard that stat, but I would agree with it.
Yeah, it's one of the great jokes I heard on the weekend. Like, why do men love golf so much? It's like, well, as men, we like solving problems. And the fun thing about golf is that you always have a new problem to solve. Very true.
Anyways, I like that saying better.
Fair enough. All right. So the Vancouver Canucks, they're always trying to solve their problems. Usually in free agency with some less than desirable contracts, at least in the past. And they didn't do that today. They elected to bring back a lot of their core group and, you know, wait to see, I guess, what opens on the trade market to continue adding to their roster. They made the Vander Kane move. Garland, Demko, and Besser all re-signed. What's your take on how Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford handled this offseason?
Yeah, I was surprised, as many people were, when our Dan Murphy broke the story about Brock Besser coming back. But I also think there's a lot of pragmatism to it. Besser, as I've said a couple of times today, Besser basically followed his heart. We know he never wanted to leave. Bleeds Canucks colors. He's settled here, comfortable here. Believes in the team. Believes in his teammates. Loves the city. And so that part, you know, I think there was always a possibility, even when the negotiations seemed to be fairly bleak. And I think from the Canucks perspective, if you look at maybe what projections were or what they thought options would be when the season ended in April, and what they might have thought, because every team plans for, if they're smart, they try to plan for every contingency, right, as far as personnel. So all the guys who are up as UFAs, they'll have a plan. If they come back, here's what it costs. If they don't come back, here's what we do. If that doesn't work, we pivot to this. I think there's been a realization, not just with Patrick Alvin and the management of Vancouver, I think there's been a realization around the NHL, sharpened especially last week in draft week, that we're just in a new economic era where these, you know, the landscape has changed so much because money has flooded into the salary cap system, at least it did before today. And when you give teams money, everybody thinks they're two players away from being a lot better. You know, the bad teams are two players away from being competing for a playoff spot. The teams in the mushy middle are two players away from being a real challenger for a Stanley Cup. And the good teams think it could put them over the top and make the difference. So it's so hard to trade for players for futures. And if you're trying to win something, you can't trade for a player and give up a good player. You can't get player A and give up a player A caliber in return. Otherwise, you're not better. So I think from the Canucks, they've had 2.5 months of bashing their head against a wall, trying to see what trades would be available to help them. And of course, we know their biggest need, biggest desire is for a center, and Brock's not a center, but that would be the money. If you didn't have Brock Besser, that would pay for your top six center. Didn't get close to making a deal. And so you turn to free agency, and well, can you do it there? Well, who the heck are you going to get out of this free agent group with what was on the board today? I think you can make the argument that Canucks got the best player available in free agency in Brock Besser. And you can make an argument about, you know, Granlund, if you like. That'd be a hard sell for me. You could make an argument about Nick Ehlers, although Ehlers has been less durable than Brock Besser in recent seasons. Very different player, but Brock has been a consistent scorer. I think it makes, at the end of the day, it made too much sense for these two sides, Besser and the Canucks, to come together than to go separate ways. And I'm happy for Brock because I know he genuinely loves playing here, wants to do something as a Canuck, wants to be a career Canuck, and there's not many of those guys. So I'm happy for him, and I do think it's a good hockey move by the team.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because the team was clearly trying to make a bigger addition. They were trying very hard on the trade market. They have been ever since they made the trade for Marcus Pedersen. They've been trying to find another needle moving forward. And in some ways, I would look at this offseason so far, not so much as being a success, because I don't think you put yourself ahead of where you were last year, which is the entire goal is to get better in the offseason. But they still have a chance the rest of this offseason to get better. And I think we were looking at it as, there might get worse after July 1st, and right now they still have a chance to get better by the time training camp begins. And I'm not saying that's a successful offseason, but the fact that you still have a chance to make something out of it, I think, is a lot better than how things looked 24 hours ago.
Yeah, a week ago, Sat, you looked before the Kane acquisition, which I know you guys have spent a whole week talking about already, so we're not going to get back into that.
Yeah.
But before Kane was acquired and is, you know, a pretty good secondary scorer in this league, you wondered, looking at, okay, if Besser leaves and Suter's not going to be re-signed because they can't agree on a number, you're trying to find one good line for the Vancouver Canucks, let alone two. You're wondering, are there enough players there for one NHL caliber first line? And now with Kane and Besser, two wingers who are going to play in the top six, they're going to have two lines. Like as long as, and this is a big if, as long as Philip Hedl is healthy and Pedersen plays a heck of a lot better than he did last year, the original Elias, then they're going to have two good lines. And I think as well, what today is about for the Canucks, it's kind of, you know, in getting Connor Garland and Thatcher Demko, who both expressed their desire to be here long term. They wanted it. Their preference was for extensions this summer. In getting both of those guys on new contracts, getting them to commit to coming back to Vancouver, and then you re-sign Besser, it kind of illustrates this belief that the Canucks and the players who have been here for years still believe in this group and still believe that they have a chance to win. You know, I loved, I didn't get a chance to hear Garland on your station earlier this morning, but I loved what he said in his Zoom call to us. he'd spent more time talking to Brock Besser than to his wife in the last week, because these guys, they want to keep this group together, and not because they're just buddies, because they actually believe with the players that they have, they can do something here. So I don't see this as being anything other than a really good day for the Canucks. And I wouldn't have expected that a week ago. And what's remarkable, it's a really good day, and they didn't bring in anyone new. All they did is they re-signed two players who are eligible free agency next summer, and they brought back their biggest free agent and one of the most popular players on this team in Brock Besser. I think that's a good day for them.
Yeah, and you know, I think they're still, obviously, as Patrick mentioned with us earlier in the show, they're going to still keep tabs on the center market and how it develops, but it might have to be something that waits until the season because, you know, with the way the trade market played out, you spoke about it earlier, IMAC, you know, it's going to be in season that you make a trade, because once you get to the season, then teams start falling out of the playoff race. That's when they're more likely to trade players off their roster rather than right now, when they all feel like, hey, we can be a playoff team next year.
Yeah. And I think the reality will set in partway through next season, that this widespread ambition, and it's a great thing. Like, it's a nice problem for the NHL to have, that there's so many teams that with parity and now a little more cash flow, they feel like they're right there and they can compete. But halfway through next season, you know, the reality will set in for the teams that have spent money or maybe added a player or two, and they're actually not better. You know, it's a rising tide. Maybe everybody's somehow going to be better, even though there's a finite number of players available. Like, there's not 64 new players coming into the league to divide among the 32 teams. So I think at some point, because it is, these are smart people who run these organizations, some point they're going to figure out this new economic landscape, and they're going to figure out how to make the moves that they need to make. But right now there's just so little movement. The Canucks have, you know, by my calculation, I know Puckpedia has a certain number, but they also have Amon and Lekker Mackey on the NHL roster. The Canucks, the way I'm looking at it, they've got 19 players that they're pretty sure are going to be on their NHL team, and they have about just over $3 million in cap space. Now, that $3 million, maybe it's going to be three graduates from their minor league team. That's another important thing, and Alvin made that point as well with us, that he needs to leave room to allow the guys who have evolved in the minors to the point that they just won the Calder Cup. He needs to give them room and a chance to make the NHL team. So, you know, $3 million is not a lot, though, if you're talking about trying to go and get, certainly not a second line center. I mean, did I see that Christian Dvorak just signed a 1-year, $5.4 million contract?
Yeah, he did.
You know, and he's very much a third line center. And that's the ceiling, maybe a fourth line center on a good team. So there's no way the Canucks are going to get an impactful center at this moment at $3 million. But it was only a couple of years ago, Pugh Suter, who's a guy they might really miss, you know, because he did, I think even now he's underrated for how much he did for the Canucks and through his versatility and various other things. But it was only 2 years ago, Pugh Suter, at this point in free agency, leaving the Detroit Red Wings, was looking for $3 or $4 million. And he ended up signing for, what, 1.6, I think, for the Canucks later on in the summer. So, you know, there's players out there right now who might be asking for three, and maybe you get them for 1.5. A month from now, if they're still available. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it could happen. I think it's wise, when you're down to these fine strokes that the Canucks have left to finish their roster, I think it's wise to wait. You do have some good prospects who may be ready to play at the bottom of your lineup at the NHL level. There's no need to rush and spend that money that you've got left unless there's some incredible deal that comes across their desk. And right now in free agency, there's never an incredible deal on July 1st or July 2nd or 3rd or 4th. You have to wait.
Well, you mentioned Pugh Suter a couple years ago. This year's Pugh Suter might actually be Pugh Suter because he has yet to sign in free agency. And when we spoke to Patrick Alvin, he mentioned that if they do sign Pugh, they do feel like they can clear up some cap space. So I'll ask you, because I think if you just read between the lines a little bit, we know that they haven't agreed on the money, but if the money is in the $3 million range, and if they can move, say, a Hoglander or Joshua to keep Suter, would that make sense to you?
Yeah, because I just think the center position is such a premium. And for that particular player, you may have guessed I'm a fan of Pugh Suter.
Yes, yes.
I think I'd have found a way, and again, I'm not as smart as the people running teams. I'd have probably tried to have him signed by now. I probably would have done something during last season, before the season ended. But I do think it's a premium position. I think... You know, I'm not sure which of the two, of Dakota Joshua or Nils Hoglander, I would say is more expendable because I like them both. I think that Hoglander, after a lot of struggle, really came on towards the end of last season, maybe wasn't reflected in his offensive statistics. But I think he's a guy who plays hard, and I think he adds something to the team. And Dakota, it's just so hard to gauge because it was such an awful way for him to start the season, you know, coming off of cancer and then having to work his way back from that. But yes, those guys, I think Teddy Bluger, especially if you're bringing back Puce and Teddy plays center, and Teddy's another guy I like. And one of the things I don't think a lot of people have thought about with Puce or Teddy is that these guys were first out on every penalty kill for a unit that was one of the real positive stories about the Canucks season last year. So, you know, that's you can't just, you know, lose these guys and think you're going to have zero effect. But I do think if you have a chance to bring back Puce, then it probably makes Teddy expendable if you're looking to shed some cap space. So they would have to do something. But in answer to your point, Sat, if it's a $3 million player that they want to add, they can find a way to do that. If it's a $6 million player, I just don't see it.
Yeah,
but if it's a $3 million player, I think they can find a way to make that work.
Well, to your point, I mean, even if they wanted to bring Suter back and the 1.9 for Bluger, you can make it be tight. You can do 21 players on the roster, but there is a way to get creative without trading those wings either. So, but I think for Suter would have to be in the $3 million range. And maybe if this continues for a few days, who knows? Like, we've seen crazier things in free agency.
Yes, we have. But right now, like, and I mentioned Dvorak's salary, well, Puce is a far better player than Dvorak, or at least his season was far better. And I know that Dvorak just signed for 1 year. So he went all in on the salary because he was only getting a year of term. And that's fine. That works for him in Philadelphia. But I think, you know, Puce is going to cost more, certainly in terms of term. So I have a hard time seeing Puce's value fall all the way to $3 million, but maybe it will. Maybe it will. And again, 2 years ago, I bet he didn't think that his value would fall to $1.6 million.
The signing Demko, you know, it certainly developed and the team made it a priority. And they were open about that at the end of the season as well. And they get it done here just before July 1st. And I like the idea of having Demko and Lankinen together. You do have one of the best goaltending tandems in the league. It's a team that's obviously going to win on the basis of its defense and goaltending. I guess, like, those are things you absolutely need to win, but is that the way you win in today's game, where we see Florida and Edmonton scoring 4 goals a game in the playoffs? It just, at some point, they are going to need more than just the defense and the goaltending that they've started to build.
Yeah, for sure. But if you're using those teams as an example, I'd say if you had reversed the $10 million goalie and given Bobrovsky to Edmonton, they would have had a lot better chance.
Fair.
To beat Florida. Not that the goaltending was the bottom line in the final, certainly, but there's still I still believe that you need a really good goalie to win. I mean, Vegas did it with Aiden Hill, St. Louis with Jordan Binnington. I guess you could argue that, you know, Binnington had just been called up. He was a bit of a nobody. Aiden Hill had kind of worked his way to the number one job from number three in Vegas. But I still think it helps immensely if you have a stud starter. And so I don't mind that. You know, I can tell you this, you know, Rick Tocchet went before he left, and I was just talking to him, and we were off the record talking about the team. And he said, if they could get one more defenseman. So, you know, look at the group they already have. He thought if they get one more defenseman who was like a second pairing guy, could play on the right side, he thought that would kind of put them over the top as a defensive team, give them about the best defense in the National Hockey League. He said you'd be in every game, no matter who you have up front. I think if you were only going to add one more impact player, I'd rather add him up front. But the point is they really believe, obviously the previous coach I'm talking about now, but this organization, like most organizations, really believes that if you're strong in goal and strong in defense and you can work your way out, especially if maybe you're not great at forward, but if you have a couple of great centers, then you can, you know, you can make do. You can move people around and get what you need to get out of your offense if you have those great centers. The Canucks had them when they had Miller and Pettersson, but now Miller is gone. So now that's what they're wrestling with. Yes, I think that ultimately for them to win anything, they're going to need to be have a little more up front than what they have now. But I think it's a good idea to make sure you have your strengths, make sure you have an identity, and then work your way from there. Like don't just suddenly try to be something you're not. And what the Canucks were under Tocchet and what I think they'll be under Adam Foote is very well drilled, very disciplined, play from the back out, limit the other team's chances, and then try to have good special teams, try to be opportunistic. We know that historically this is a high shooting percentage group. They do have guys who can finish, even though the grand total isn't what it probably needs to be, the grand total of goals, but they do have guys who can finish. And so I think it's fine to start the season this way and then see how it evolves.
Hi, Mac. We always appreciate the time today and throughout the entire season. Our next Canucks game is not till September 21st when camp opens and the first preseason game is. But hopefully we'll have some time to play more bad golf together.
Hopefully so, and hopefully more time to talk on the radio, but don't call me tomorrow.
Fair enough. Thanks, iMac.
See you guys.
And you can always check out iMac's latest at sportsnet.ca.
Yeah, so Canucks got some business done. It's, you know, and this is the interesting thing, because I think iMac is right. This is not a bad day for the Canucks. It's a good day because they got guys done and got players that they wanted to keep and players that a lot of people like, but it hasn't been a leap forward for the organization, and the hope had been this offseason that you take that step forward, and that work continues.
Mm-hmm.
And the next few weeks to months are going to be interesting, and the last few years the Canucks have pretty much done most of their work early. Now they signed Suter later in the offseason, but generally most of their work was done early, and then around training camp it picks up again. What are the chances that we do a couple of emergency shows for Canucks Central here the next couple of months? I think this might be the year that happens.
Might be the year that happens if a trade does develop. Hopefully not next week,
because it probably won't be signings. Because last summer we did two summers ago, it was JT signing. Mm-hmm. Towards the end we did a show for, and then there was the Brock Besser signing.
Yeah,
but all the extensions outside of Sherwood are done.
Yeah. all the extensions outside of Sherwood are done, unless a Marco Rossi trade happens over some time. Bill Guerin comes down off of his ask.
Do we do one for Sherwood? Is that worth an emergency pod?
You know what?
If they sign Sherwood to an 8-year, $20 million deal, maybe Sal would be in for that.
Because it is Kiefer Sherwood, and if I'm in town, I might do something. Even if it's solo, I just jump on the headset.
Solo.
Yeah, I'm going to do 20 minutes on Kiefer Sherwood. It might, if I'm in town. Like, it's not going to be one where, hey, even if I'm out of town, I got to find time to call in and we'll do something here and get
it
out.
What's the definition of in town in regards to Kiefer Sherwood?
It, like, literally being access to my home.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But if I'm, if I'm on my trip somewhere, I'm probably not going to.
I thought you might be flexible with that. Say if you were in, like, Whistler for whatever reason.
No, probably not. No. Like, I would have to have the gear. I have the gear at home.
Yeah.
I'm not taking the gear with me this summer.
I'm not bringing a microphone to Jamaica. Sorry. This Insider was brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together at online at DLEAMC.com. And, of course, iMac joined us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. Final segment on signing season day next on Canuck Central.